It is Friday, October 9th. Welcome to Menace to Sports, episode 122. Our first preview episode of the year. Really, really fired up. All right, dang it. I said I wasn't going to say that. All right. Just really, really jacked about this episode because we just went through, I don't know, probably 20 games of film again and really studied the analytics. And we're going to talk about like four or five games on this episode, the big games, right? The national landscape. First, we're going to have a quick conversation about Virginia Tech, North Carolina this weekend. And also University of Florida versus A&M should be two solid games to watch. And then we're going to take a deep dive into our trio games of the week, if you want to call it that. We have one game of the week, but Tennessee, Georgia is going to be awesome. An old school battle for the SEC East, defense versus defense, right? Nick Saban's old defensive coordinators battling it out. And this time, finally, Tennessee has at least a shot, right? And then we're going to talk about Texas, Oklahoma, the Red River Shootout. And that's still what it's called. You can fuck off, cancel culture. We're going to talk about the the opportunity for Lincoln Riley to put a nail in Tom Herman's coffin if Texas has balls. And then our actual game of the week, Clemson, Miami, what we're really, really excited about. I'm fired up to watch it because we're going to, if nothing else, we're going to learn so much about Clemson, so much. Some of the things that happened this past weekend, we're going to see if Miami can expose those same things. So we're going to really talk about the analytics. And today is a very quarterback heavy day. Really dove into the analytics and the film on like four, maybe six of these quarterbacks. And I want to talk about what I saw and talk about, you know, kind of who's doing what and what they do well, what they don't do well, what teams can expose. I want to talk about all of it. So this show in the future is hopefully it's going to come out. We're trying to switch it up and go Monday, Wednesday to Patreon, Tuesday, Thursday to the public. That's our plan, what we're trying to get done. I'll tell you what screwed me up and what's really making this difficult is here in Powell, Ohio, we are on hybrid schooling, which means my kids go 2 or 3 days a week every week. And then they're homeschooled on the other days. Well, wouldn't you know, I get my kids every Wednesday and then I have them all day Thursday. And so, of course, Thursday is a hybrid day. So I lose and I have them Wednesday and then all day Thursday, no school. It's like, and I'm like a substitute teacher. It's unbelievable. But I took them to school this morning and got after it. I mean, was grinding. So I wouldn't trade that time for the world, but it's really, you know, screwing up my time commitment to this show and everything else we have going on. Speaking of which, been teasing it, been talking about it. Tickets are going on sale tomorrow. The Ace on Lane, a charging experience. It is a game day experience, a watch party. Come hang out with me, the Menace to Sports crew, get some game analysis, surely some yelling at the O-line and the defense for missing tackles, and partner with Braxton Miller. So he'll be out there, a handful of former players, I'm sure. Don't know who, and I'm not here to promote this as a former player event, but Braxton and I are hanging out. We're having a game day experience. We are trying to bring something different to campus in Lane Avenue. So if you want to come down, come hang out with us. Tickets are going on sale tomorrow. It's right next to the Varsity Club at the Point on Lane, same as last year's Penn State tailgate, but we have a whole nother area. So we have the same general admission kind of room for the watch party. And then we're going to have a VIP balcony it's a big, nice size balcony, outdoor TVs everywhere. We're going to have it's not going to be a delay, which is exciting. It's going to be all you can eat, all you can drink, general admission and VIP. Like I said, limited tickets because of COVID. We're socially distanced, wearing masks, the whole deal. Don't want to get shut down. Don't want the health department coming to get us. So tickets go on sale tomorrow. Stay tuned to our social media, Braxton's social media. We'll be putting it out everywhere. And then also while we're talking about the kind of the administrative stuff, make sure you follow at Menace to Picks. It's our gambling sports book, analytics and advice platform. It's really exploded. And we've had some really, really good days. We had a bad day yesterday, but we've had some really good days and we're up major since we started. So make sure you check that out. And as I've always done, what a segue to hear from our sponsor, our supporter, MyBookie. You get the picks from us, you go to MyBookie, you play with their money, and then you win. So let's hear what MyBookie has to offer. Unless you've been living under a rock, you know the NFL is back and the NBA playoffs are in full swing, which can only mean one thing. It's winning season at MyBookie. I don't know about you guys, but for me, a game is 10 times more exciting when I'm putting my money on it. Sometimes I have a gut feeling about a matchup, and sometimes I'm just betting on my team because they're my team. Regardless, whether you've been betting for years or you're ready to play for the first time, MyBookie is your best bet this season. With the biggest online selection of bets and props, they've made it simple to win and easy to withdraw your cash. Right now, they've got a $100,000 super contest for only a $10 entry, and they're giving away $5,000 in cash prizes every 4 weeks. You would be crazy not to invest in your sports knowledge with that kind of potential return on your investment. $10 to win thousands? Sign me up. Shoot. You too can sign up at MyBookie, and if you use the promo code MENACE to claim your 100% deposit match all the way up to $1,000, that means you put $100 in and they give you another $100. It's an easy way to jumpstart your bankroll. NFL, NBA, and MLB. They've got it all on tap, and it's never too late to get started on your winning season exclusively at MyBookie. Well, there you have it. Free money. We give you the picks, the advice, and you go win money. Simple as that. I wish it was that simple, but it is. Honestly, right now, we're winning money, so if you do it on MyBookie, you'll win too. But really fired up. I don't want to talk about it. That's enough administrative stuff. I went 9 minutes last show, so I'm at 6 minutes right now. So enough about the administrative stuff. Let's get to the show.
What a hit! Denzel Ward! You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me! Hurt my feelings!
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose spin move! Miller heading for the end zone!
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis!
Oh my God!
Davis is going to run it all the way back! Auburn's going to win the football game!
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Wow, he has trouble with the snap, and the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson, and he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here, then. Okay, see ya.
All right, episode 122, and I don't know if I ever mentioned it, just kind of a quick pump up for all of you. We surpassed 2 million downloads. It was not that long ago, but I don't know if I mentioned it, but 2 million downloads is stupid. I mean, for a podcast that got started that most people wanted to hate me, they wanted to hate this podcast, and it is going stronger than ever right now. So I really appreciate all of you for listening. I appreciate you telling people about it because I know the content that we are putting out. I know the time I'm spending on it, and I know the time being spent on ESPN or Fox or wherever. So I know this is really good content, and I know it's educational. I know people get a lot out of it. So thank you. Just want to throw that out there. Thank you. Thank you for kind of helping us make this thing grow. Just a couple of things to talk about. First, we're going to talk a little gambling. We're also going to talk about Dwayne Haskins was benched. He was actually not only benched, he was completely put at the bottom of the depth chart. He's now third string. And it's really unfortunate for him, unfortunate for the Redskins, unfortunate that Ron Rivera decided to go this route. Because I know the talent that Dwayne is, and I saw how he just played in their loss on Sunday, and it is completely unwarranted. And so I've said all along, I know there's more to unpack here. And I think it has to do with they don't really like Dwayne. Plain and simple. It's not about how well he throws it. It's not about kind of how good of a quarterback he is. I don't think they see the intangible value, which I get. I'll talk about Dwayne for a minute. Dwayne is not a leader, like a big-time rah-rah leader. He's not got that it factor. He's not Tom Brady. He's not even Cam Newton with the moxie. He's not that. All right, and then the rumor is now that he was gloating about his stats after their loss on Sunday, and the team started getting pissed. And to be honest, like I don't think it's right. I think he's a young kid, and he's only played 1 year in college, not even a full year in the NFL. I think they could work with him on this thing. I think they could teach. It's a teachable moment. It was a chance to develop him and help him grow and mature, and they failed. They missed that chance. And so now they're going to bench him. Hopefully he can get traded and get a new life, because you see it all the time. These quarterbacks that are taken high go to a horrible situation and they end up getting traded or cut, and another team picks him up, and all of a sudden they resurge. It's like it's not that the kid can't play. It's that the the whole organization is fucked up. And if and that is the Redskins to a T. I watched the film. I went back and watched a couple games. I didn't study it that hard. But what they're doing on offense is like they're not even giving the kid a chance. And I think some people have seen the screenshots. It's like guys are not the timing and spacing. It's all screwed up. And it really what he had was he had a chemistry with Terry McLaurin to say, hey, I'm going to throw it to Terry because that's my guy. And the rest of this shit is all fucked up. And that's what he did. So just unfortunate for Dwayne, but you know what? Adversity can turn a lump of coal into a diamond. So hopefully that's what happens for Dwayne. Also want to shout out Mark Pantone, the best in the business when it comes to personnel, recruiting, etc. Happy birthday to old Pantone. So if you get a chance, sing him a happy birthday, shout him out on Twitter. It is his birthday and he's one of the best in the business. But real quick, before we get to the college landscape, I do want to give you our picks, our Menace to Picks. As I said, follow us on Twitter, at Menace2Picks, or you can always go to our website, menacetosports.com. We put our NFL locks on every Thursday or Friday, and right now we're hitting 64%, so you do the math. I mean, you subscribe on Patreon, you get a 64% win percentage, and you make money, and eventually you offset your cost, and really, you're making money. You're not even paying us money to give you the picks, but we're always going to give our four NFL locks of the week out for free. We are 15-9 on the NFL right now. That's 63%. So our locks of the week from Menace to Picks, Jacksonville at Houston, we're taking the over 54 points. Bill O'Brien's gone, and we really like to take the over. The other one is the Giants-Cowboys. We're taking the Cowboys -9.5. The Giants haven't scored 20 points in any game this season, and so we're taking Dallas at -9.5. The other one is Carolina +1 at Atlanta. The Panthers are actually playing pretty well. We like the Panthers +1. And then the final one, we got to ride with Joe Big Dick Burrow at +13.5 at Baltimore. Contrary to popular belief, these teams have been playing each other very tough over the last 10 years, so we like Joe Burrow to keep it at least close, maybe lose by 10. So those are our NFL locks of the week, those four, and I would advise you to bet them individually as opposed to a parlay because you can miss one, and if you hit three, miss one, you're going to win money. If you hit three, miss one on a parlay, you lose it all. So just wanted to throw that out there for you. It's our little advice from Menace to Picks. We have a Patreon going, $25 a month. You get at least 2 to 5 picks every day like we already hit today on a tennis pick. So just check it out. Patreon.com/Menace2Picks or just go on Twitter at Menace2Picks. But let's talk college football. The ACC has a couple good games, but the one that I'm going to look at to tell me something is Virginia Tech at North Carolina. We know about the Miami game, the Clemson, Miami-Clemson matchup, but I'm curious about this Virginia Tech-North Carolina game because Virginia Tech has a legitimate running back and a legitimate run game. And this will be North Carolina's biggest and only test until they play Notre Dame and Miami back-to-back to end ACC play in November. They don't play Clemson, so this is going to be huge. And I said all along, I think North Carolina is the only team, and Miami surprised me. I think North Carolina was the team that might be able to give Clemson a run for their money. Notre Dame is not going to. I don't think that's going to be a close game. I think Miami has a chance tonight, and we're going to talk about that later in the show, but North Carolina is the team I'm looking at with Sam Howell and Chaz Surratt and some of the guys they have, that those two leaders on offense and defense. I really like North Carolina. I don't know how good they are yet, but they have a chance to be good enough to compete with the Tigers, which is all you can ask for in the ACC. 80% of the teams, they can't even compete with Clemson's backups. So Virginia Tech, I think, provides an opportunity for North Carolina to show that they are on the right path to take down Clemson in the ACC championship game. Now, Virginia Tech got absolutely railroaded by the ACC with their schedule. If you haven't looked, you got to pull it up. They will need to pull off this upset against North Carolina and then survive a 3-game stretch of Miami, Pitt, and Clemson in November to stay alive in the ACC. You talk about brutal. I mean, the ACC just bent them over and did them dirty. So I'm really excited to watch it. Definitely tune in. We will definitely talk about it on our post-game analysis show next week. Just what we learned about North Carolina. Unless something crazy happens, hopefully we learn something. And we could talk about the shaping up of the landscape of college football. The other game that's not a deep dive for us is Number 4, Florida at number 21, Texas A&M. It's a ranked matchup and a chance for us to learn some about Florida. I've talked about it on this show. I think their defense is very suspect. I think Kyle Trask is playing second to maybe Trevor Lawrence and Mac Jones. That's it. He's on fire. Kyle Pitts is probably one of the best offensive weapons in the country. And so this is really a matchup that I'm excited to watch, right? The number 2 scoring offense at Florida versus the number 10 scoring defense in the SEC. So that's going to be a landslide. Florida should be able to score at will. The offense should look great. What I want to see is how the number 10 scoring offense at A&M goes against the number 9 scoring defense at Florida. I want to see, Florida has an opportunity here to put on a dominant performance on defense. If they can do that, we will learn a lot. I don't know if A&M will be able to score. They're bad at it, and Florida isn't great at preventing it. That's the reality. But if the Gators are really going to become a player in this national landscape, if they're really good at scoring points and A&M isn't good at preventing it, then this should be a blowout. Florida's averaging almost 500 yards a game thus far, and A&M is letting up an average of 400. This should be an offensive explosion. But I think this is a call to task for the Florida defense. I mean, they're going against a fairly inept offense, and they need to hold them to minimal yards, minimal points, and really dominate to show me that they can beat Georgia, beat Alabama, and contend on a national landscape, because I don't think they can. With the skill they have on the outside at receiver and the defense that I've seen on film, I think Florida is a cut below all the other teams. Now, we'll get to Georgia in a minute. I don't think they have the quarterback play to do it. So we're talking big boy football now. We're not talking about going 10-2 and maybe losing the SEC championship game, and winning a bowl game. That's not what this show's about. If that's a good season for you, you could go fuck yourself and go listen to Paul Feinbaum. This show is about being elite. Who's going to be elite? Who's going to be LSU? And right now, Florida doesn't look like it, but there's time and opportunity. A&M is giving away the football like it's weed at a fish concert. It's ridiculous. I mean, they have 5 turnovers this year. So I don't see them beating Florida. I think Florida covers. I think Florida beats them handily with the way Kyle Trask has been playing. But if you're asking what we're going to get out of it, I'm looking to the Florida defense to show me something. You got to show me something. Georgia's defense is showing me something. Alabama's defense is showing me something. Shit, Tennessee's defense is showing me something. I need to see more out of the Gator defense if we're going to talk about them as a team that can beat Georgia, beat Alabama, and go compete with Clemson, Ohio State, and those teams. I got to see it. That brings me to the SEC East, really the SEC game of the week. Number 14, Tennessee at number 3, Georgia. I had fun looking at this one. One, because this is two of Nick Saban's former D coordinators squaring off with statistically the two best defenses in the conference. So if you don't know this is literally like the SEC's Young and the Restless, right? Jeremy Pruitt was the defensive coordinator at Georgia. Mark Richt gets fired. They hire Kirby Smart from Alabama, who is the defensive coordinator at Alabama. So then Jeremy Pruitt leaves Georgia and takes Kirby Smart's job at Alabama and becomes a D coordinator there. 2 years later, takes the Tennessee job. It's like an incestuous merry-go-round in the SEC. Of the defensive gurus in Tuscaloosa. It's literally like a plot out of a daytime soap opera. But it's the number 1 scoring defense in Georgia and the number 2 scoring defense in Tennessee in the SEC. They're going to face off. The other thing it is two very, very well-coached defenses. I mean, right now, Georgia's averaging 5 missed tackles a game on defense. Tennessee's averaging 9. Single digits. What have I preached about? How many times do I have to talk about it? These two defenses tackle well. They line up in the right spot. They play with great technique. They tackle well. This is going to be a defensive battle. Now, granted, we'll get into it in a minute. Tennessee hasn't really played anyone yet, and they kind of struggled stopping the run. So really, one of the keys to this game is Zamir White needs to have a major impact in this game. Georgia needs to run the football and prove that they can do that, because they don't have the quarterback play to win without it. So I need to see Zamir White. I need to see the run game dominate Tennessee. Georgia is one of the best defenses in the country. It is number 1 in the SEC against the run, the pass, scoring, total, shit, you name it. The number 1 statistical defense in the SEC. And don't forget, Georgia just played Auburn. It's not like they've only played cupcakes. Both defenses have only allowed one passing touchdown on the year. People aren't throwing for touchdowns. Georgia's forced four interceptions on the year. This Georgia secondary is playing lights out with Richard LeCount, Tyson Campbell. And if you're a Big Ten fan, you need to get hip to the SEC right now. One, because it's all that's playing. And two, because this is the national landscape. And we're going to face some of these teams if you're a Big Ten fan or Ohio State fan, hopefully. Now, granted, like I said, Tennessee hasn't played a formidable opponent yet in 2020. They beat South Carolina by 4, 31-27, and then they played Mizzou and won 35-12. So they haven't played a great team yet. But Pro Football Focus has this cool thing. It's called Opponent Adjusted. They'll rate a team in the conference adjusting for opponent. And Georgia has the second-best defense in the SEC, opponent adjusted, and Tennessee has the 8th graded defense in the SEC. So Georgia has the clear edge based on that analytic. But I love both of these defenses. And honestly, what Georgia did to Bo Nix and Auburn was very impressive. If nothing else, this will be a huge opportunity for us to learn more about this Georgia offense as they get tested by the Volunteers 7 days before the big matchup with Nick Saban's Crimson Tide. So this is going to be a telltale game about Georgia, of what type of checker do they have going in to play Alabama? And can they contend with who I think might be the number one team in the country? So let's get down to it. Let's talk about the quarterback play. As I said, this is going to be a very quarterback play episode. We're going to talk about both of these quarterbacks, Stetson Bennett at Georgia, Jarrett Garantano at Tennessee. We're going to talk about the Texas-Oklahoma battle between Sam Ehlinger and Spencer Rattler. We're also going to talk about the big quarterback matchup of the weekend, Trevor Lawrence and De'Arik King. So six quarterbacks diving in deep. And let's start with Jarrett Garantano. That's a tongue twister. Say that 10 times fast. Jarrett Garantano. Here's what he has to do. He has to hit some deep balls for Tennessee to have a chance in this game. He's 5-for-13 at 38%. That's okay. He's got to hit deep balls. But the reality is this. Tennessee needs to protect him. Because here's what his analytics and film show. There's a 20% drop-off for Jarrett Garantano when he's under pressure. He goes from 67% completions to 47% completions. But here's the caveat, and I want you to really think about this. There's a lot of math going on. He's better when he's blitzed than when he's not. All right? So what does that mean? That means when teams blitz and it's picked up, they're able to pick up the blitz. He is doing a great job attacking blitz coverages. But whether it is base defense with a pass rush or a blitz that does work and doesn't get protected, he's abysmal. He's not very good. So what does Tennessee need to do? They need to protect Garantano, and they need to let him attack blitz defenses, because I don't see Kirby Smart sitting back and letting this kid go against base coverage. I think they're going to blitz him. If Tennessee can pick up pressures, they're going to have a chance. This kid is not bad against the blitz. Ultimately, though, he needs to throw some damn touchdowns. He has 2 passing touchdowns on the year, so he's got to throw touchdowns. This is a coming out game for Garantano if Tennessee and he is going to be have a bright future ahead of us. Now, what he's facing on the other sideline, Stetson Bennett, I'm very unimpressed with. He's only thrown 3 touchdowns with much better weapons and a better run game than Tennessee has. He is the liability in this game and the key to a Tennessee upset. They need to play base defense or simulate pressure. Here's why. Stetson Bennett has only thrown touchdowns against blitzes when protected. So what I mean by that is, if they can play coverage, play 7-man coverage, right? There's 11 guys, 4 guys rush. If they can put some pressure on him with 4 guys, whether it is just D linemen rushing or twisting, or they blitz but drop guys out so it's still only 4 men rushing, if they can do that, he is not a great quarterback. He's only attempted 7 deep balls on the entire year. That's half as many as Garantano. But he is hitting 43% of them. So they need to make this kid beat them with his arm. And if they need to get pressure on him, they have to do it simulated. Don't give this kid depleted coverages. They're too good at skill. They'll get open and he'll find them. So they both have attempted 25 passes over 10 yards, right? Both quarterbacks. So it's a pretty fair evaluation, right? Stetson is 14 of 25, 56%. Garantano's 11 of 25, 44%. The reality is this. One of them's a former walk-on in Stetson, and the other one is the former number one dual-threat quarterback in America. It's time he lives up to the hype, or it's time he moves on. Because this kid was supposed to be, I mean, I remember we recruited him at Ohio State. This kid was supposed to be big time, and he hasn't been. It's time that he goes and wins, has a signature win. Jeremy Pruitt is ready for a signature win. And here's the matchup I'm also excited to watch. Josh Palmer of Tennessee, the receiver, versus Tyson Campbell, the first-round corner at Georgia. This is a South Florida matchup. St. Thomas Aquinas and Josh Palmer versus American Heritage and Tyson Campbell. I'm taking Tyson in the matchup. I'm excited to watch that. I'm also excited to watch the matchup of the number one rusher in the SEC, Ty Chandler at Tennessee, and the number three rusher in the SEC, Zamir White. Again, opponents taken into account. I like Zamir. He's the better back. But I'm excited to watch the run game and see if either of these teams can run the ball on stout defenses. Tennessee also needs to keep the ball away from Kyaris Jackson and George Pickens. Both are perfect on the year with zero drops. Neither of them has a drop. And either one can really hurt the Volunteer defense. But before we move on, here's how Tennessee can win the game. Number one, win the turnover battle. Tennessee has not lost a turnover yet this year. That's phenomenal. And it goes back to what I said. Jeremy Pruitt, this team is so well coached. They might not have the talent to beat Georgia or Florida or Alabama yet, but they are extremely well coached. And here's the reality. In Georgia and Kirby Smart, he has seven losses since 2017. In the combined total for those seven losses, they lost the turnover battle 15-3. So if Tennessee wants to win, they got to protect the ball like they have all year this year, and they have to get the ball from Stetson. They have to. The other thing is they need to do is stack the box. They have to stop the run game. Don't let Zamir White beat you and make Stetson Bennett throw the ball to beat you against base coverage. Don't give him freebies. And if they can keep this thing low scoring, that's the third key to victory. If they can keep low scoring, the over-under's at 43. If they can keep this under 40 points, I think Tennessee wins the game. So that's a lot of ifs. A lot of ifs. Do I think they can do it? I don't know. Georgia's defense is too good. They have skill on the perimeter. They got a great running back. At the end of the day, who's going to play better at quarterback? The former walk-on or the former number one dual threat in the country? That's the question here, right? So I'm excited to watch it. I'm excited to watch to see how real Tennessee is, what Jeremy Pruitt has gotten accomplished in the offseason and COVID and everything else, and also how good is Georgia? We're going to find out because this is a legit defense. I want to see this offense play. I want to see Zamir White in the run game play. I want to see can Kyaris Jackson and George Pickens, can they get open against one of the best defenses in the country? One of the top 10 probably, right? That's what I'm excited to see. So fired up to watch that game. That is a big game that we are looking forward to. It will tell us a lot about the landscape of the SEC and the national landscape. So definitely tune into that one. All right, but just because we do the hybrid model and it's $2.99 a month if you want the full episodes, we want to put this I enjoyed this Miami-Clemson breakdown too much to hide it behind a paywall, quote-unquote. So I'm going to give you at least the first half of this breakdown for the public show, and then the second half will be on Patreon and also the Oklahoma-Texas conversation, the Red River Shootout. That will be on the full episode. So if you want, subscribe, $3 a month, and you get the full episodes. But let's talk Miami-Clemson, the game of the week. Number 7 Miami, number 1 Clemson. This is a battle of the top scoring offenses in the ACC, 1 and 2. This is a battle of the best quarterbacks in the ACC. So I want to break down De'Arik King versus Trevor Lawrence, right? One is the number 1 graded quarterback in football, on pro football focus, in Trevor Lawrence, and the number 5 graded quarterback in football in De'Arik King. So two top 5 quarterbacks. This is going to be amazing. Both have a perfect touchdown to interception ratio. Trevor has thrown 7 touchdowns, 0 picks. De'Arik King has 6 touchdowns, 0 picks. So this will all be about who will make mistakes. And so I've said it a lot on this show, and this year's been the year. We always talk about missed tackles. This year has been the year of hidden yardage, and then also quarterback play over 10 yards. I've said it a lot. I'm going to say it again until it gets, I'm going to beat it in your head. Average quarterbacks live life in under 10 yard throws, right? They throw screens, checkdowns, quick game. They live there under 10 yards. Big time quarterbacks live life over 10 yards. Now they still check it down. They still throw screens, but they thrive in those longer throws. So just think about length of throw, right? Length of throw is what dictates success rate a lot of times. So middle of the field throws have higher success rate than throws outside the hashes. But when you have a great one, when you have Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields or Tom Brady or whoever you want to say, all those throws are all, he's successful at all of them. Joe Burrow was successful, so successful down the field in on deep balls. He was very successful outside the hashes. That's how you eliminate an average, or really that's how you identify an average quarterback and an elite quarterback. So let's look at it. First thing is, Derek King, here's what I noticed. He favors the right side of the field. 81% of his passes are to the right side of the field, which is, I mean, that's astronomically high. And it's interesting when you talk about quarterback fundamentals. I've talked about them before, but why that is the case, right? And the other thing is this, he's better to the left, 50% completion percentage. This is all over 10 yards, right? This is where elite quarterbacks play. He's better to the left with 50% completion percentage than he is to the right, 24% completion percentage. Here's the other thing. He has launched it downfield 17 times, which is, that's high for a quarterback this early in the season. 10 of those 17 launches are to the right side with a 10% completion percentage. So he loves to launch it to the right side. He just doesn't complete them to the right side. 43% completion on deep balls over the middle and to his left, 10% to the right on outside the hash on deep balls. So on the flip, so that's the Derek King. He favors the right, God knows what reason. He doesn't have more success to the right. He's much better throwing to the left or over the middle of the field, right? On the flip side of the ball, Trevor Lawrence has thrown 13 deep balls, which is still above average, and zero of those are to the right side of the field. He's 7 of 13 on deep balls, 54%, which is really high. Joe Burrow, for example, was 57% on deep balls last year, which is that's like leads the country pace, right? That's the type of clip that is. Over half of 4 of Lawrence's 7 passing touchdowns have come on deep balls. Think about that. They rely on the deep ball. The big plays for big touchdowns, for points. 4 of his 7 touchdowns are on deep balls. 1/3 of King's have been on deep balls, right? Over half for Lawrence, 1/3 for King. So throws over 10 yards, right? Where real quarterbacks thrive. Let's compare them. Overall, Trevor Lawrence, 17 of 30, 57%, 421 yards. 57%. Derek King, 13 of 34 for 38% and 353. I love this stat because you get to see, like, Derek King is not near the passer that Trevor Lawrence is over 10 yards. The other thing I like to look at, because a lot of teams do a lot of these little push passes, right? Push sweeps that count as passes, or they throw screens, running back slip screens. That doesn't do shit for me for a quarterback. I can go out there right now for Ohio State against Clemson and backpedal and flip a screen. It's not that hard. You just got to have a high release, get it over the D lineman's hands, and you're good to go. So I like to take those out. Take all throws behind the line of scrimmage out, right? Trevor Lawrence is 38 of 60, 63% for 644 yards. 76% of his production is past the line of scrimmage throws. Only 5 of his 7 TDs were positive yardage throws. Okay, so that's Trevor Lawrence. Derek King, 38 of 70. So 54%, respectable, not as good as Lawrence, for 588. 80% of his production are on past the line of scrimmage throws. And all 6 of his touchdowns were past the line of scrimmage throws. So that's a fairly evident picture. What did we just learn? Trevor Lawrence is almost, not almost double. He is a 20% better quarterback, 10 yards plus, right? Derek King loves to launch the ball downfield, doesn't hit him very often. That's the offense they're running. But when it comes to just positive yardage throws, no screens, none of that bullshit, Lawrence is slightly better, but they're about the same, right? I wouldn't knock Derek King for that. So the next thing I look at when I evaluate a quarterback is this. How has pressure affected each quarterback, right? Not only blitz, we talked about this, not only when they're blitzed, but when they're just pressured, right? The left tackle gets beat by a DN. Chase Young beats the tackle. How do they react? Can they still operate effectively? All right. So here's Derek King. 46% of his dropbacks, he's blitzed, right? That means teams are trying to blitz him. I mean, it's about half. Half of the time, they're trying to blitz him. They're trying to get after him. He is hitting 63% completion percentage on 9 yards an attempt. That's outstanding. That's really well. Now, here's the other deal. When pressured, right? And we talked about the difference. Blitzed doesn't mean pressured. Blitzed means they're bringing more than four. Pressured means people got beat, it didn't get picked up, and he now is in duress. He's 31% completion percentage under pressure. When he is blitzed and Miami picks it up, he is at his best, better than he does against just base defense. A lot like we just talked about with Garantano. That is very important. So let's talk about Trevor Lawrence. He's blitzed one-third of the time. Derek King's blitzed half the time. Trevor Lawrence is blitzed one-third of the time. That's important. Trevor Lawrence is 54% completion against the blitz. He's 31% completion under pressure. Now, it sounds like these are very similar, but here's the issue. This is far worse than Trevor was last year. He was 50% when he was under pressure. 50%. Now he's 30%. So that's huge now, and there's a reason. Because of the guys he lost. Because of the guys in the perimeter he lost. Who he's throwing it to, right? He's athletic enough. We saw that in the playoff game last year. He can get out of there. He can escape pressure. The change in who he's throwing to is the difference. So for Miami to win this game, they have to pressure Trevor Lawrence. This has to be a Manny Diaz blitz fest. It has to be. That's how Miami's going to win the game. They have to get to Trevor Lawrence. And sometimes that seems obvious, but that was not the case with LSU. If you attacked Joe Burrow with blitzes and tried to get after him, he was going to kill you. You had to have, I honestly don't know what plan you could have had, but he was better against the blitz, so I know that wasn't a good plan. But Trevor Lawrence has a 20%, he's down 20% against pressure this year. So that right now looks to be the way to slow him down and this offense down. But I do want to talk about Clemson's offense outside of these quarterbacks. They're the number two scoring offense in the ACC. Miami has the number six scoring defense. Clemson actually has the number nine rushing offense versus the number 10 rushing defense. So they don't run it well, and Miami doesn't stop the run well. So that should be interesting. The number one passing offense against the number seven passing defense. So the matchup in the run game for both teams seems pretty even. They're both not very good at it. Clemson throwing the football will dictate the outcome of this game. Can Miami get after Trevor Lawrence? Will Manny Diaz blitz his tits off? The 10th best team in America getting at the quarterback. They have to be that. They're top 15 nationally in sacks. Miami and Manny Diaz have to get after Trevor Lawrence. That's the reality. And this will be the greatest pass rush that Clemson has had to face to date. Now, the tackles Jackson Carman and Jordan McFadden have played as well as you could to this point. The real question will be this. Miami has a guy I want. This is the potential impact player for Miami. Nesta, they call him Jade Silvera. He's a D-tackle, monster. Larry Johnson told me when we were recruiting him, he reminded him of Warren Sapp. That's how good this kid is. It's going to be all about how he fares against Clemson's liabilities in pass pro. Their center, Cade Stewart, and guard, Matt Buckhorst. They're 67% and 60% grades in pass pro. Their interior line is the liability for Clemson in pass pro. And I'm telling you, Miami has one of the best D-tackles in the country. That is a key to victory right there. Clemson needs to attack Miami's weak link in the secondary, Tecori Couch. He has a 58% grade in coverage, and he's already given up over 100 yards receiving in three games. As well as safety Amari Carter, to be honest. He has a 60% grade in coverage. That's what Clemson has to do. All eyes will be on Hurricane safety Bubba Bolden. You want to talk about another opportunity for an impact player. Bubba Bolden out of Vegas, transfer from USC. He's Miami's top cover safety. He's the best DB in coverage. And it'll be interesting to see how they can use Bubba Bolden to try to handle and put a cap on Amari Rodgers, who leads the ACC in touchdown receptions, by the way. How will Bubba Bolden stop Amari Rodgers? Because I've already talked about it. I don't think Clemson is as skilled on the outside. Amari Rodgers is the real deal. Travis Etienne, the real deal. Can Miami put a cap on it and stop this Clemson offense? Because this is the weakest Clemson offense I've seen in 3 years, 2 years. Since Trevor Lawrence has been there, he has liability and pass pro in the interior O-line, and he doesn't have the freak show out wide. If Miami's going to win the game, if they can find a way for Bubba Bolden to stop Amari Rodgers and they can stop Travis Etienne in the run game and the checkdown game, this is going to be they're going to have a chance. Miami could pull this upset off. But I wanted to get that out to the public. We're going to talk about Miami offense, Clemson defense on the subscription show. Also going to really talk about Spencer Rattler, Sam Ellinger, Tom Herman's future, and can Lincoln Riley seal his fate? on Saturday in the Red River Shootout. So anyways, thank you for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the analysis. Like I said, $3 a month, you get the rest of it. Another, whatever, 25 minutes, 20 minutes, something like that, of this show. So go to patreon.com/menacetosports and sign up. $3 a month, you get all full episodes. As I mentioned, also, stay tuned tomorrow. Ticket sales, the Ace on Lane. They will be going out tomorrow. You're going to want to get them quick because we don't have a ton because of the COVID guidelines. So those will go on sale. Check them out. And then, as I mentioned, our Menace to Picks are on fire, man. We're gonna really try to make some cash. What do they say? Get that bag this weekend on some college football and NFL games. So thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. As always, I appreciate you. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you were entertained. Hope you learned something. Hope you were educated. And as we say, if not, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
What a hit, Denzel Ward. You got barbecue back there, and you didn't invite me. Hurt my feelings.
You'll be pleased to know this is the last time I'm hosting. I don't care anymore. I'm joking. I never did.
Braxton Miller's loose. Spin move. Miller heading for the end zone.
You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world.
He'll run it after the 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, 45, 50, 45. There goes Davis.
Oh, my God.
Davis is going to run it all the way back. Auburn's going to win the football game.
Lucky for me, the press can barely speak English.
But they are who we thought they were.
Well, he has trouble with the snap. And the ball is free. It's picked up by Michigan State's Jalen Watts Jackson. And he scores on the last play of the game. Unbelievable.
Well, then get the fuck out of here then. Okay, see ya.